Greetings to each one in Christ's name this morning. I have to say I'm a little bit out of my comfort zone. We have a small group there at Living Springs, and I get nervous around large groups of people. But I pray to God that through this service that He can have power over what is said. As was mentioned already, Jimmy mentioned this morning, the title of the message is Navigating Modern Technology Challenges. I would invite you to turn to Psalm 101 for some opening verses this morning. As we think about this subject, it's a huge subject. When Brandon called me, he wanted to know if I would preach it. I said, do I have one or two sessions? And he says, what do you need? I said, well, it works better in two. Not that I have so much to say, but there's too much ground to cover. If I would try and cover everything we have this morning in one session, I'm afraid by the time you got home, your dog wouldn't even want your burnt sacrifice. He'd sniff it and walk away. And you'd be bored stiff. So Lord willing, we're going to break this down in two messages. I have preached this a number of times in different groups. This morning, we want to basically look at what we have, the modern influence. And as the title suggests, the dangers. What can we expect? Why do we do the things we do? And this evening, I would like to take you to some scripture to combat the issues that we face. How are we going to continue to be faithful ourselves and also to raise up a faithful generation behind us? This is not a thing that our forefathers faced nearly as strongly and as heavily influenced as we do today. And I'm going to be blunt this morning, and I'm going to say it's mostly our own fault. And I will explain that more in detail later. Let's look at Psalm 101, verse 2 and 3. It says, I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O, when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave unto me. And if we had the prayer that David has here this morning, this is my desire for you, as each of us dabble with this problem, this issue that we face, that we would have a desire within our heart to walk perfectly before God in our own personal walk of life. Whether it's on the job, whether it's sitting in our couch with that thing in our hands, or wherever we're sitting in our privacy of our office or our bedroom or wherever we are, our desire is that we are going to walk before the Lord with a perfect heart. It would take care of a lot of problems, and we could benefit greatly if we had our relationship with the Lord very, very secure. So as I prepared for this message this morning, I went to this book right here. I just went through this book with our Bible school group in one of the classes that we had, and I taught the class. That is a book written by John Koblenz, Christians in the Digital Age. If you don't have a copy, get a copy. And they're only a couple dollars a piece. There's a lot of valuable information there. We're going to reference that. It's along the way at different times. One of the things that disturbs me so much, or maybe troubles me more would be the right word, troubles me to speak about this subject is because I know it has divided families, it has divided churches. Probably mostly because people were uninformed. And I don't want to do that this morning. I'm not here to cause a division. I would like this to be a time where we can get a better understanding of how we use the technology that's in our hands. How can we use that to honor and glorify God? How can it be a benefit to my life? This technology is not going away. It is here. What are we going to do with it? How are we going to face it? How can we navigate through this muddled mess that we have on our hands and still remain a faithful people? Manoah came to that place with raising his son. He wanted direction from God. He requested that God send him that angel again. He wanted more information. My heart's desire is this morning that we want more information so that we can be faithful in navigating these challenges that we face. It's, as I said, it's not going away. In fact, it will probably get worse. And we will have more and more and probably more difficult scenarios and questions to face as the world continues to degenerate into this whole moral decay in society. Man is bent on getting worse and worse. How are we going to maintain our high calling with the God that we serve in a society where things are just sliding? One of the things that comments that I have heard different times over the years is that, well, we don't want to get involved because if we get involved, we open ourselves up. Brothers and sisters, this morning, you are involved. If you have one of these, you are involved. And now you have a choice. Are you going to stay involved, or are you going to throw it away? Well, another question, another comment that comes is that, well, the worst of it's out there. We live a protected life. No. We don't. We are wide open to the snares of the devil. The devil is the mastermind behind this whole thrust of technology. One of the things that bothers me the most, I love children. And I want you parents to listen, young parents, grandparents. This thing right here is your children's future. Are you going to teach them how to use it? And we'll talk about more of that tonight. Don't think because your children are growing up in a protected environment that they won't face these things. No. Our children are wide open and they are vulnerable. And the effects that that thing has on them and their young minds is astounding. And I have a lot of information this morning and I hope to get you out of here by 11 o'clock. So stay with me because we're going fast. In 2018, the World Health Organization printed this article. And it is dealing with the gaming addiction. One of the things I want to clarify before we get started. You say we don't have games. We don't get involved with the movie watching. Well, that's fine. And I'm glad you don't if you don't. But one thing about this, there is little to no difference between the gaming, the social media surfing, and watching movies. It all has the same effect on a person, especially young children. So the thrust of this article is towards children. And one of the questions they ask is, how serious is the condition? And I'll just read this. And this is geared toward gaming disorders. And this article was written, the World Health Organization had to come up with this article so that parents with children that had problems could go to their insurance companies and get insurance money for help. This is how crooked our society is. When there's one good option beyond insurance companies, we could shield our children from these types of things. One of the things that they are going after here, it says, how serious is the condition and how many children are affected in the United States? It says gaming disorder rates vary between 1 and 10% of youth gamers. The only national study that I'm aware of, that this one conducted with Harris Poll, which included over 1,000 children between the ages of 8 to 18. And we find that 92% of the children who play video games and about 8.5% would classify as actually having a disorder. Of the about 40 million children that were in the United States at that time, that means 3 million children are having gaming disorders. That means 8 out of 100. How serious is this? And we could say, well, that's out there. I'm here to break the news to you this morning that if you talk to your school teachers, if you have any of this stuff in your home, your children are affected, and your school teachers can pick it out. I have talked to numerous teachers. Do you see this? How is it affecting the children? Do you have any of these children? And you're like, oh yes. Oh yes. We see it in our plain communities, in our Mennonite Christian schools, however you want to call them. This thing is here. We have attention disorders. We have lack of being able to stay focused. We have anxiety problems. And most of this comes down to this very subject. A school in Connecticut had a problem. There's another article I printed out some time ago. School in Connecticut had a problem, so they got a new principal one year. He comes in and he realizes how bad the problem is. The problem is so bad with children bringing these phones to school that children are completely distracted in class time. You come to class, and the first thing you have to do is tell the children to take their earbuds out and put their phones away. And you might have to remind them that of multiple times throughout the class. This is bad in the public school system. So they came up with this idea that they have to get rid of the phones out of school. And now most schools, to my knowledge, in the United States already has a no phone policy within their school. But it's not being enforced, hence the problem. So we have this problem. What are we going to do with it? They actually have pouches that the children come to school, drop their phones in these pouches, and it takes care of the problem. No surprise to anyone. The students actually, after some time of getting over the initial shock, enjoy it. They realize they aren't learning. They realize the problem that they have. I don't believe that we have, should speak for our own school, I don't know we have that major of a problem in our own school. There has been some talk about it. We have taken some steps to try and correct it before it gets out too far out of hand. I know there are schools that do not fully enforce it, and they are having distracting problems. You can't operate this and pay attention to the teacher and then come to a test and expect to pass it. You will fail. How did the problem get that bad? I'm not here to answer that this morning, but there are places that have bad problems. And I trust that we don't get there. I trust that we have what it takes to stay on top of it. Navigating modern technology challenges. When did this all start? A little history. First cell phones were actually built in 1984. Motorola built the first phones. And they were actually hoping for a marketing frenzy. Did they get it? I think of the people that were hoping for that frenzy would be shocked where they're at today. First phone was introduced in 1984. Today, 52 years later, or 42 years later, I'm calculating, 42 years later, we have this. My question to Motorola would be is if they knew that this was coming, would have they done that back then? I don't know. Today, mobile phones, listen, mobile phones are an essential part of daily life as more people depend on them. We depend on these things. We're built around this thing right here. Our businesses, our daily life depends on this thing right here. If I walk out of the house in the morning and forget it, which I did a few weeks ago on a Saturday morning, I walked out of the house and I jumped in the truck. I ran down below Baltimore and made a delivery. And I was about 20 minutes away and I'm like, phone, gone, it's not here. Oh, hope I didn't drop it on the driveway. Well, and my mind starts to go. Well, the boys are gonna do this morning and hopefully they don't have any questions, they just got to figure it out. And you know what, they did. Life went on, surprisingly, life went on. But your first impulse is, ooh, what's happening? Am I going to get through this? What am I gonna miss? Well, that's how essential or how built around these things our life is. You know, the morning turned out fine. I got home, yeah, there was some things they had to figure out, but that's okay, they could do it. They didn't need me. They proved that. So if we go on with a few more up-to-date statistics, actually this was 2024. We depend on these things for communication, work, social networking, online, shopping, etc. As of 2024, 98% of the American people, or 331 million people, own a smartphone. Each day, the average American spends 4.5 hours on their mobile device. On the average, their children get their first phone by age 12, and I have a problem with that. And by age 15, almost all children have them. I have a problem with that. Children don't need these things. That's my personal opinion. The problem is, some of the problems we'll talk about later on. What this thing does to us, how we respond because of we have this thing. Now, to exactly identify what we're talking about, what do you call this? We call it a phone, but I use it for GPS. I use it for a computer, it's a calculator. I do about, my life comes off of that thing. When I have questions, I can Google it. It's no longer a phone, it's a device. Is the phones were those things that you picked up off the wall and made a phone call, and then when you were done, you hung it back up. Most of our homes probably don't even have them today anymore. We don't need them. So, that's where this whole subject gets very sticky and it goes off the rails, because we have, our life depends on these things. And because our life depends on these things, you don't like to hear what I'm going to have to say this morning. And this is where I'd like to sit down. Jimmy asked me if I had the order of the service this morning, and I said no. He says, "Oh, good, you're on your own." I thought later, I'm like, "Yeah, that means we shut down early." Sorry, Jimmy. Maybe you'll take my notes and go on. Anyway, we have these things. We have a problem with these things because they're part of our life. We get accustomed to them. We're comfortable with them. We even talk about it. Our security thrives around these things. We walk into a place where we are unfamiliar or uncomfortable, and what do? You dig this thing out of your pocket and you start doing something. Yeah, we all do it. So, years ago, our forefathers could make some restrictions. They drew some lines. And this is where the whole problem with this thing comes into. It's a tool. We use it as a tool. We rely on it. So to say, no, we're not going to have it, we can't hardly do, because our life depends on it in a lot of areas. And if it was a situation as simple as saying, as our ancestors did, no, we don't have TV. No, we're not taking the radio. No, we're not having game stations. These were things that they drew lines on. Why? Because of the influence and the trash that you get across off of it. Today, this thing is a one in I don't know how many devices. It's all there. I can listen to the radio. I can watch any movies I want. I can play games off of it. The list goes on and on. That's why it gets sticky, because we depend on it, and yet we recognize the danger, and we don't know how to swing the balance. Where are we at with it? How can we use it? Where do we draw lines? I can put filters on it. I can set time limiters. That helps, but it's not the answer. Because it still comes down to the individual user and his heart's desire. It's up to each of us to decide, what are we going to do with that thing? So the problem we have is no information or bad information. And then we go, well, I don't know, so I'm going to use it how I want, because nobody else agrees with me. Can we get informed? It's what we need. We need information so we can make good decisions. Do we know the effects of the things that we do with this thing and how it will haunt us in years to come? Part of the problem is knowing where to draw a line and how to draw a line is because they change so fast. A phone generation is about 5 years. I think right now we're in the sixth generation of phones. I think. Fifth or sixth. Now, you remember some of the older ones. I'm on the very edge. You remember when phones came out? They had a bag probably twice the size of this. You picked them up, you made the phone call, you shut them off because you didn't want the roaming charges. They were about before my time. I was in mid-teenager, I believe, when they first hit the market. They were big, they were clumsy, they were not much good. Service was very poor, especially in spotty areas. They did the job. They were a cell phone. They were a device where you could make calls, get yourself out of a pinch, whatever, move on. And we can see how they have turned, and today we have this. We have apps. I'm not even sure how many apps are available. I should check it out sometime. But we have apps for about everything we want to download, search. We can do a lot of things that we shouldn't do. So the problem we have is we don't know where to draw lines. We don't have the ability hardly to draw lines because of the usefulness of that thing. And yet we realize there's dangers, but do we know what the dangers really are? So I have a few points here, and I want to move through these hopefully fairly quickly. Some of the things that we just need to, the few of the dangers that we need to understand. First of all, we already mentioned this. We need to know that the TV, the gaming, the social media surfing, the YouTubing, and the movies and all that all have the same effect on a person. And this is especially damaging to young children whose brain is not fully developed. While normally about 90% of the brain develops by age 5, a child will go through developments and brain changes until they are approximately 20 to 25 years old. So any of you teenagers that you guys, you think you had it all figured out, well, your brain's still developing and you actually don't. And the problem is part of the brain that develops last. Does anybody know what it is? It is your ability to decipher and to determine right from wrong and to be able to stand up against it. Sadly, that is one of the last parts of your brain to actually develop. That is why this is such a critical time in your life. Now, I'll tell you something else, guys. The girls develop 3 to 5 years earlier than you do. So they got it figured out before you do. Just remember that. Anyway, as our brains develop, we have, in young children especially, some of the problems that come out, and I have another article here, some of the problems that happen, the young children, especially under age 5, you will have your front of your brain where you are, your ability to speak, think, reason, whatever, develops. And as you spend hours and hours just surfing, feeding your brain with useless knowledge, and your brain is shut down, and you're just on automatic feed, what happens is your front part of your brain actually thickens. And you have problems, especially in young children, speech delayment, they start talking later. When you go to school, you have harder times looking at a problem and being able to figure it out. You can't look at a story problem. I won't ask how many like story problems because I never did. You can't take a story problem, piece the different steps together, and figure out a formula to answer the question. That is one of your problems with spending too much time just sitting there on automatic feed, just doodling. You end up being one of the lower scoring students in your classroom. You will be one of the last children to start to talk. You will have speech issues because your brain that develops that part and actually where that comes from has a hard time to operate because you have spent too many hours just wasting away. Keep that in mind for young children. fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics, after reviewing many studies, have issued a statement on media for children under age 2, concluding there is no such thing as educational TV for this bunch. And yeah, we'll speak that tonight. There's a solution there, but I will say that for tonight. Problem solving is delayed or not being able to fully develop at all. You wonder why we have so many unintelligent, dull-looking children, teenagers, young adults walking our streets. This is why. Because they just simply haven't been able to put it together. This is the upbringing in society that we are raising. This is our secular world. And I trust and I pray that it's not here amongst us. But if we don't have any teaching on this, and young parents open this up in their homes, this is what we can expect. Friday morning, I delivered a load over to New Jersey, and I was right in the heart of town. Just slipped my mind. It was right there by the Cancer Society, Northern Jersey, off of Route 80. The fellow said, be here at 6 o'clock because by 7 o'clock it becomes a madhouse. And he was exactly right. And I was sitting in the truck. It was getting daylight. And I was watching people go both sides of the street, walking the street. And there was some very spaced out individuals walking the street. Now put yourself in a... This has long-term effects, but put yourself in this situation as a teenager, and then you go through life, you come to the end of life, and you're now an old person, and old people play Sudoku games, they play other mind-stretching games to keep their minds sharp. What is this bunch going to do? They're not going to be able to sit down and do that type of thing and figure it out because they never developed the problem-solving part of their brain. It never could develop because of that. I can see we're going to run out of time. Third thing I have here is the addiction part. Does anyone know why a person has a desire to sit down and just simply media surf? Or they sit down and watch a movie. It is actually a very addicting problem. There is a hormone within your brain that is released when you do this type of thing because it arouses your brain and it arouses this hormone and it's called dopamine. You have this drug in your brain, and it's there for a good purpose. But the problem is we don't know how to use it, and we abuse it. And we sit down and we watch a movie, and we get an arousal. We play a video game, and we get an arousal, and we feel good because we've done this, because our brain has released this hormone, and it makes us feel good. Now, what happens is, in situations where these people sit down and they overdose, quote, on this thing, it actually blows holes in your brain, and in a brain scan, you cannot tell the difference between a heroin brain and a gaming addict, or a movie addict, or a social media addict person. You cannot tell, and in brain scans, there is no difference. I have heard this illustration used, that this hormone is like spraying ether into a diesel engine. It can handle some, and some is okay. But too much blows it apart. We know what ether in a diesel engine does. It'll rattle, and it'll boom, and it'll be all over. And it's exactly what your brain does. When you go into overload, overstimulus is the term you can use for that. You overstimulate your brain, and you have a release of too much dopamine in your brain. It's good. God put it there for a reason. It's like so many other things. We are wonderfully and fearfully made, but we have taken a step too far, and now we have overload, and we ruin our mind because of this. Under this addiction point, I have a few other things I want to bring in here. First, why is this stuff addictive? Just this week, Mr. Mark Zuckerberg, the man that is the CEO of the group behind Meta, which is Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, whatever, was called into the court of California because his product is addictive, per a young lady. Why? Why is his product addictive? It's not his fault, or is it? It is. It's not by chance that these things are addictive. They are addictive. They are intended to be addictive. Because social platforms such as Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, BuzzFeed, all those, they depend on advertisements to support them. And so the more advertisements that people will view, the oftener the advertisements hit the platform, the more money they make. And the only way those advertisements are going to hit the platform is if you use it. And so they are making money off of you. And so, of course, they are doing what they can to make these things attractive. And then they become addictive because, hey, I got to go see what so-and-so did or didn't, you know, what they posted, or the list goes on. Or maybe you want to post something. These products are designed to be addictive, and it's not by chance. They want a product that is so good that you can't stop using them, and they have well achieved that. They have actually groups of people employed to make sure they're doing their job, to keeping them addictive. Number two, some people actually use these things as a way to escape. It is a hard day at work. Person comes home and they gotta go. They jump on their phone and they try to escape the world's problems by media. Number three, security. Did you ever see a child carrying a security blanket around? Or young children, they like to have a nook. Like this security blanket, or your nook, better yet a nook. But that's what it is. It's created, you use that as your security, and you carry it around, and you say, well, I gotta have it. Makes me feel comfortable in my uncomfortable situations. In high pressure times, you're gonna pull your phone out and start to look at it. We talked about the deep dopamine release. Going on away from the addiction part, point number four, attention span. We talked about some of that. Let's just go on. We're going to run out of time anyway. The fifth point I have here is a time waster. And I just had a young man a few weeks ago. He told me, he says, you know, he said, I realized I had a problem, and that was great. He says, I actually went and set a time limiter on my phone so that I don't use it more than 30 minutes a day. He says, I'm shocked at how fast those 30 minutes pass and how little I get done in those 30 minutes. Well, when we understand that the average American person spends 4.5 hours on that thing a day just searching social media or whatever they do, what can you and I as Christians today do with 4.5 hours? We like to be productive people. We're going to do something. But doing something doesn't include doodling on that. It is a time waster. How does God view that? When he says, redeem the time for the days are evil. Doodle on your phone. It's a good pastime, right? Really on that. Number six, relationships. We live in the loneliest, people are the loneliest in all time. We can soon go back through history and realize that people worked together, played together, stayed together. People were together. We were built as relational beings. God put it that in us as a characteristic. We are built. We enjoy friendships, relationships. But social media relationships are not relationships. They are, I don't know what you want to call them, but they're not meaningful relationships. They're relationships, but they're not meaningful. You don't get satisfaction out of them. Years ago, your parents, grandparents had to pick up the phone and make a phone call. They had voice, the tone of voice. They had, if you were visiting, you had body language. And a lot of conversation, a lot of things get missed in conversation through social media. In fact, you only get about, is it 14%? It's a very low percentage. I should have double-checked that number. It's a very low percentage. You only get a small percentage of the conversation when you are not in face-to-face conversation or at least hearing the person's voice. There is so much that gets displayed by body language and tone of voice that you simply miss. And that's why people have come to a lonely spot in life, because they don't have those deep, meaningful relationships. Young men, if you're intending to look to the other side of the house for a spouse, social media is not the way, place to find it, and it is not the way to build that relationship. I'll leave that. Relationships, deep, meaningful relationships, they take time, they take energy, they take commitment, and we hate that word. We don't like that word, commitment, but it's what it takes to build that relationship. Having a media relationship is on my terms. I do it when I feel like it or when I have something to say. Otherwise, I ignore it. So we have cheap relationships through social media. Peer pressures. Point number seven is peer pressure. How many of you woke up this morning and checked your Instagram? Anybody have Instagram? Probably one of the first things you did this morning, right? Why? Make sure you didn't miss anything, right? You got to see what your friends posted. Anybody that has Facebook, probably check their Facebook page this morning, maybe multiple times. Make sure that somebody wasn't posting something on the snowstorm. Peer pressure. We post things out of peer pressure. I don't. I just be honest with you, I don't. I have a problem with that. It is a way to pump up. Right here, me. Look at me. See what I did? That's why they post things on social media. They want to make sure everybody knows what, right here, I did. And it's peer pressure. Because if you don't post something, well, then you're going to get left behind. You might lose your friends. They might unfriend you because you have not posted anything. People have went on trips. They've done excursions because of peer pressure, because of what they see when their friends posted, and they don't want to be left out. They have, the other thing that happens under peer pressure of posting things is, my life looks dull and boring because my friends are posting all these exciting things and the things they've done, places they've went. They must live just in an exuberantly satisfying life that's full of fun and pleasure. They didn't post to things of the day-to-day grind, the humdrum, sister standing there washing dishes and dirt, folding laundry. Nobody's going to post that kind of stuff. But they do it. This is typical life. They do those things even though that they do post their exciting things, because that's the picture that people want to display of their life. They don't post the bad day on the farm happenings. Maybe they do. People post some weird things. So, number 8. This is the last one, and this is the tough one. But in this whole world of technology, we have this major issue called pornography. I don't even want to touch on it. I don't like to speak about it. But it's a very, very real thing on both sides of the house. It is men and women. Porn users on the women's side, in case you think I'm losing it, is about a third of the porn users. And I want to read you something out of this book this morning. And then I will close. It is a problem that our world faces. And Mr. Peter Kreeft, and I don't know who this guy is, but he wrote a book, and I should find the book and read it. It says, making choices, finding black and white answers in a world of grays. The observation that he made is a remarkable change, he says, has come about in our time. He recognizes that lust has always been part of human interaction, no matter what the era or culture. But lust has fundamentally changed its origin in the modern world. Lust used to come from the flesh, from the individual's fallen natural desires, and I think it still does. He don't say that, but I do. Now it also comes from the world, from social conditioning. We might ask why digital technology is so potent in luring men and women into sin. Mr. Koblenz gives a few reasons here. Says a number of factors contribute to the power of digital pornography. First, technology allows people to record and produce high-resolution graphic images and edit them for maximum appeal. What once was unrealistic gratification of self only in the imagination is now made to appear like real life and readily available. Furthermore, a person is able to pursue this unreal world in privacy. No one knows, and no one will find out. In this hotbed of unrestrained sin, lust has free rein, and there are no apparent consequences. In reality, he goes, of course, this is shot through with delusion. Those who produce pornography care nothing for those who view it, only for the dollars they generate. According to numerous sources, many ladies who perform the sexual acts of pornographic films are doing so against their own will as slaves. Furthermore, secret sin will someday come to light. It is only a matter of time and eternity. And there are consequences. Minds are being corrupted. Bodies are being wasted. Souls are being destroyed. Manhood and womanhood are being mutilated and ruined. The society that understands freedom as the right to do as we please and combines that with blatant denial of moral absolutes as a recipe for moral collapse. That is what we are seeing in Western society. And I want you to get the last sentence. And the digital world makes it easy for Christians to join this slide into debauchery. How are we going to navigate the challenges of modern technology? Come back, Lord willing, this evening, and we will look at biblical ways to combat this world that we live in on godly principles. Let's kneel for prayer.